everyone, Chat Cemetery is back, and I am joined by a brand new guest today. We are talking all about Quicksilver Highway, which is a little bit of a different Stephen King adaptation because his story isn't the only one adapted. But Ryan Larson, how are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I'm very excited to talk about this movie.
Of course. And why don't you just go ahead and quickly introduce yourself for those who might not be familiar with you?
Yeah, I am Ryan Larson. I am the editor and co-founder of GhastlyGrinning.com. Our like kind of mantra is make horror happy. So everything you'll find on there is all with a celebratory and positive intent. You're never going to see any like negative or scathing reviews. We still point out things we might have not liked, but the intention of a review is to try to help that movie or show or book or whatever find its audience. So we try to highlight the good while still covering the bad sometimes.
Sounds like this podcast.
Yeah. It's also a safe space for horror. So like we are very big on trying to make sure and push female minority and LGBTQIA representation in horror. So that's another big goal of ours. I'm also the co-host of the Keep Screaming podcast. I do that with my best friend, B, and that is bi-weekly, and we cover slasher movies. Every other week, we take a slasher and we dissect it from top to bottom, and then at the end of the episode, we rank them on like how well it works as a slasher, not as a movie necessarily, but as a slasher film. And then I'm kind of just all over the internet. You can find me at Bloody Disgusting right now. I have a column over there, and I'm on Twitter a lot. So yeah, at Ryan Larson on Twitter too.
Nice. I will be sure to link to all of your things in the show notes for anyone who is interested. And like I said, today we're talking about Quicksilver Highway, which is, it's something, you know, to say the least. And I've sort of hit this stretch on this podcast where I was like, wow, the 90s were kind of wild for Stephen King adaptations. And this one, you have the adaptation of Stephen King's Chattery Teeth and Clive Barker's The Body Politic, which I have not read that story, so I was totally unfamiliar with at least half of this going into it, and Chattery Teeth I had read recently, semi-recently anyway, so why don't we just go ahead and start with King's adaptation, because obviously that is the point of this podcast, but were you familiar with the Chattery Teeth story before watching Quicksilver Highway?
Stephen King is definitely, I mean, like most horror fans, I would venture to say, is one of my favorite authors. I've been reading King now for, I don't know, the better part of 2 decades, probably. I think I got my first Stephen King book when I was in like 6th grade. It's funny, my mom wouldn't let me watch rated R movies or play rated mature video games, but she like didn't really put a whole lot of like foresight into what I was reading. So like she was like, well, it's a book, right? So books are good. So I think I started reading King like at a particularly young age. I was always like, I was an advanced reader, so that was cool. So I think I picked up King like probably around 5th or 6th grade is when I read Salem's Lot. Was definitely my first one.
Okay.
Yeah, but I mean, I love his book of short, like his books of short stories. They're probably some of my favorites. And so I definitely was familiar with Chattery Teeth. Yeah, before going into the movie. And what's funny is I'd seen this movie before so long ago, though, I forgot that that is the story they picked to adapt for it.
Yeah, I hadn't even seen it. And this one is actually really hard to find. And I don't know why, but I ended up having to watch it on YouTube with like Spanish subtitles embedded into the video. So you couldn't turn them off or anything. So I was like, well, I guess I'm getting a Spanish lesson during this as well. So at least the movie itself was in English and I could understand and not have to read everything. But it was just super bizarre because it's like, you can't rent it or buy it on iTunes or anything. It's not on any streaming services. I was like, okay, the DVD is like $50+ on Amazon. So I just did a quick YouTube search and I was like, well, someone uploaded it and it hasn't been taken down. So that is how I'm going to watch it. But really with Chattery Teeth, from what I remember, it follows the story pretty closely. And I will note that this is directed by Mick Garris, who is a very frequent King flyer, as I like to say, because he has done quite a few adaptations. He did a lot of the TV stuff in the 90s. He did The Shining, which I talked about just before this episode. And you have just this very specific style that I think Mick Garris goes for, and that's why King likes collaborating with him so much, especially on his own stuff and not necessarily original stuff, just stuff that he's adapting. And I feel like with Chattery Teeth, you really get the vibe of the story, but the teeth weren't quite as menacing as I thought they would be given the story content.
Mm-hmm. I was excited when I saw it was Mick because I know that Mick Garris like did that string of like King adaptations. And what's funny is I saw Mick Garris's The Shining before Stanley Kubrick's The Shining.
Oh, okay.
And again, because my mom monitored a lot of what I watched, and that's actually how I happened upon, I saw this movie when it came out because It was on TV, and like anything I could find horror on TV, I just ate up because like my mom, it was, you know, before TV mature, like really existed, and you know, like late night, like I wasn't watching like FX or anything. So like that's, I got kind of a skate by on that too. So I know I saw this when it came out, and I know I saw Mick Garris's The Shining when it came out too. Like I remember recording it onto VHS so that I could rewatch it. So it's funny, for years, actually, like I was like, yeah, I like the Shining, and people are like, oh yeah, blah blah blah. I'm like, oh no, like the one with the guy from Wings, and they're like, what? Because I actually do kind of have a soft spot for that movie. But yeah, like I was excited when I saw it was Mick, just because he's handled so many, and it's like you said, I do think he has like kind of a handle on that kind of like quirky Stephen King weirdness, and I do think he has, honestly, like I give him a lot of props because I think he decided to try and tackle some of the stories that were too goofy, maybe, or like people thought were not going to be able, like, I think, you know, Sleepwalkers is another one that from the outside looking in could be seen as something that wouldn't work as a film. Uh-huh. And there's a lot of King stuff that's so easy to adapt. So I give people like Mick Garris and Mike Flanagan a lot of credit for trying to tackle these, like these stories that, you know, like Chattery Teeth, like realistically, when you look at all of his short stories, like that's not going to be the first one that people pick up as something they want to adapt. So I give him props for being so bold with it.
Yeah. And even though I haven't really loved a lot of the Mick Garris stuff, I have an appreciation for him doing a lot of these adaptations and making them for TV, because back then you had a lot more rules about what could and couldn't be shown on screen, especially when you're doing stuff like The Stand and even just The Shining. You know, it wasn't quite as iconic in look as Kubrick's because you didn't have, you know, this giant thing of blood coming out of the elevator and all of this other stuff that you could get away with in movies or today with television series. And because of the time period, I'm always taking these things into account when I'm discussing these, because these aren't things that I grew up with. I was 4, I think, when this came out. So it wasn't something that was on my radar until I really started getting into reading Stephen King and the idea came about to start this podcast. But for me, to see some of the weirder stories like Sleepwalkers and Chattery Teeth be adapted, it just goes to show how much people really enjoy King's work. And it's kind of one of those refreshing moments where you're like, oh, I'm not the only weird one who loves a lot of his stuff. Okay, here we go. And obviously, with him being a bestseller in the movies doing so well, the TV shows getting a lot of viewers for the time, you can tell that he has stories that resonate with people. And I don't necessarily think that the combo of Chattery Teeth and The Body Politic are relatable stories because they're a little too off the wall, but you get this sense of, okay, if we were in this guy's shoes, we would feel the exact same way about this hitchhiker who was standing in the middle of a road during a sandstorm, you know, as he did. So there are still relatable aspects, even if the thing wouldn't actually be happening. You know, these teeth aren't going to outright attack anyone because that's not something that is going to happen unless you build them in a way to where you can program them now. You know, I guess in 2020, anything is possible.
That's true. Yeah. I still think that's why King sells so well and is so relevant, is because he does create like very relatable human stories. And even when the situations are outlandish, the people and their reactions are usually still pretty normal and like grounded. And that's why I've always been attracted to, like, I just think he has a handle for writing people very well for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
And even it, like you said, even in something like this, that is literally about a pair of chattery teeth, like giant chattery teeth that spring to life and murder a man, the reactions of the men in the story around those teeth are still completely relatable. And I think it's those little touches that King throws in too, like in this story, how our main character, Bill, right? How he calls his wife and he talks to his son, and like he's trying to get home for his son's birthday. And like, you know, he's already like very tired from this trip because he has to go on the road to make sure that his family is taken care of. Like, I think it's those little like details that King throws in there. And not only that, like also just like the quirky personalities of our diner owners.
Mm-hmm.
I do think there's a lot of those little things he does that make something that much more relatable. And not to say like something that doesn't do that can't be good. Like I just read Paul Tremblay's book of short stories and I really liked it, but it's very different than Stephen King. And mm-hmm. like that was one thing, like it's a lot more to me, it's a lot more abstract, I guess you could say.
Okay.
And it's those little human touches, I think, that keep me coming back to Stephen King all the time.
Yeah, I think that's what made me want to really start to dive into his work, because I hadn't been reading things chronologically at the beginning. I had read The Shining, I had read Cell and The Girl Who Loved Tom Gordon. So it was just a really random mix of his stuff. It wasn't even like some of the biggest novels aside from The Shining. It's not like I had read It and Pet Sematary and Carrie right off the bat. So after reading four or five of his novels, I was like, okay, my mom has a ton of them. She had started buying the mass market paperbacks when they first started coming out, and she had through, I want to say, Wizard and Glass. So there was a good chunk there for me to start on, and I had bought some others here and there. So I was like, I don't know what it is about this guy, but I just really want to read all of these books, because I had seen movies and TV shows by that point. It just draws you in the way that he does his character work. And in something as short as Chattery Teeth, because, you know, Mick Garris actually wrote this as a pilot for a television show. He basically took two episodes and kind of mashed them into one, and it was really going to be the pitch for this Quicksilver Highway TV show. So you have Chattery Teeth that is, you know, about 40-ish minutes, same with The Body Politic, and you have to get to know your characters in such a small amount of time with something like that. And while I think maybe it would have been cool to do another creep show instead with these two stories in particular, or, you know, maybe put these into Creep Show 3 and replace whatever went on with that, but still got this. And while I didn't think it was the most fantastic thing in the world, I thought it was fine, and it did a nice job of just giving you these quirky stories and bringing them to life, and they tie them together with Christopher Lloyd's Quicksilver. So, you know, you have that sort of creep show type element to this. And while I don't think it was pulled off quite as well, because, you know, creep show is known for the effects and just the way that all of the stories look and how sort of the creep ties everything together. But in this, instead, you have an actual person tying these things together. But I just, I'm so fascinated by what came out in the 90s, and the fact that this, again, was so hard to find. I was like, why is this the thing that is hard to find? Because I knew going into this that certain things would be a little harder to find, and there were like special editions of books or short stories, and I was like, okay, I'm not going to bother with those, because I saw they were going for like $200, and I was like, we're not going to bother with that stuff. But this, I had no idea it would have been this hard to find. Did you end up rewatching this before the podcast?
I did. So I actually also had to find it on YouTube.
Okay.
I watched the same version as you with the Spanish subtitles. And it's wild because I know, so like I said, I remember watching it on TV, and I definitely remember renting it too. So it's wild that that DVD is so much. I can only imagine that it's got to be like a rights thing.
Yeah.
And also just made-for-TV stuff is just so hit and miss on its availability.
Mm-hmm.
And like, I feel like we're getting to that point where people are starting to take it more seriously. Like, we live in a time now where we're really lucky that we have companies like Shout and Scream Factory and Arrow and Vinegar and all these like companies that are scouring, you know, whatever they can to try to get any product to put out. And I definitely am seeing more of, like, you know, we're seeing like Wes Craven and John Carpenter's made for TV films start to hit like those kind of like boutique dealers. So yeah. It's only a matter of time till we get up to the 90s and these start to be, you know, reanalyzed and relooked at, and we'll probably end up getting something depending on rights. You know, I think the fact that it's Barker and King would probably have something to do with it, although I can't imagine that those two would ever be petty enough to like have a quarrel. It's probably more like whoever owns the rights to Clive Barker's, you know, body politic in media, and then Chattery Teeth as well. But I did end up rewatching it, and yeah, I read up on it too, just like you, how it was like supposed to be a pilot and then they mashed it together to create this movie. And yeah, it doesn't work quite as well as Creepshow. And I think Creepshow has an unfair edge because it has the creep who's undeniably cool. And then also, and then it has like this comic book style, like this old EC Comics feel, which is also really neat. So also when you're doing an anthology show, something like this, you're competing against, you know, Creepshow or Tales from the Crypt, which had the Crypt Keeper, who's also awesome. Or you try to go live action and now you're competing with Rod Serling, who, even though the Twilight Zones went off for years, like, he's still a staple and an icon. So I think what they did here is interesting. I loved reading how Mick Garris wanted someone sexy for the role and they somehow landed with Christopher Lloyd. He's not quite a sex icon to most, I believe, but I think he's perfect. I think his hairpiece is really bad, but I think like his acting and the way he talks and like he brings a certain amount of menace to how he says things, but it's in a weird way where you're like, is this meant to be menacing or is this how this guy talks? So I think that actually really worked for the character. And I kind of like his backstory of like, I'm just a keeper of tales and telling these stories, and like, you take away from them what you want to, because I'm just telling you the story. Whatever you need to take away from it, that's on you now. I've told you this story, so you do with it what you please.
I would like to note too that during the whole Chattery Teeth lead up, you have this sort of Airstream trailer that he's towing, and the lady walks into it and it just looks so much bigger than the actual trailer ever would. So you kind of get this sense that there's something a little supernatural going on with that scene. And then when you see him later, you know, in the tent at the circus or whatever it is, and he just has so much more space than it looks like on the outside, you kind of just get this vibe where you're like, oh, okay, he's one of these people and he's telling you a story, but he's probably not telling you everything you need to know. So it was just a fun little thing that I noticed in comparison to a Creepshow and these other anthology series. And I think in the long run, maybe it could have worked, but the combination of the two stories, they were so drastically different that I could definitely see it being like an hour long TV show where they just maybe do one story and have Lloyd as the narrator at the top of the episode and at the bottom of the episode, sort of thing. But, you know, sometimes we don't always get to see these things come to fruition. So at least we did get Quicksilver Highway out of it. But is there anything else in particular about Chattery Teeth that you want to mention?
I love how goofy it is. I don't know if you caught it though, like, I'm sure you did. At the beginning of the episode, when he walks into the store, like, Christopher Lloyd's character is looking at the teeth and he leaves.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I love that little cameo. So I do, and I agree with you, like, the stories are very drastically different. And I think it would work as like standalone episodes, but mashed together, it seems a little hodgepodge.
Yeah.
No, but I just enjoy how like bonkers it is. Like, you know, I think, again, Garris realizes, okay, there are parts of this that I can make as serious as they need to be. So like the part where, you know, the hitchhiker is essentially like holding him up and threatening to steal the car, and, you know, Bill kind of loses it. Like that stuff all seems like it's very tense and like suspenseful with still a little bit of like mania in it to keep it from being too serious. But then when we need to go off the rails. Like, Garrus is not afraid to straight up just have this pair of chattery teeth chomping on a dude and dragging him out into the desert. So I appreciate that he is willing to play like both sides of the coin, essentially. And I think he does that pretty well in both of the segments.
Yeah, and I will note that Raphael Sparge, I'm probably butchering his last name, but he was pretty entertaining as mostly Bill. He was also Carrie, the newlywed, but as Bill, he just sort of has this moment where you see that turn, like you mentioned, and it just works so well for how quirky the story is to begin with, because it's one of those stories where when you're reading a King collection, you're like, oh, this one's a little different than the others. And I haven't liked his collections quite as much as you have, but there are certain ones that just stick with you. You'll read Night Shift or Nightmares and Dreamscapes, and you're just like, oh, okay, I understand why these short stories are the ones that ultimately ended up being adapted. And because this one was part of something bigger, you can't help but wonder what else would Mick Garris have wanted to do as far as Stephen King short stories for this had he been able to run with the idea.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest like bummer of thinking about it, is especially because I feel like horror more than anything, more than any other genre, really has like a plethora of short stories. I mean, you know, Chattery Teeth was originally published in Cemetery Dance, which is, you know, a magazine that collected horror shorts, not just Stephen King stuff. So it would have been very interesting to see what he decided to pick from King, but also what he would have decided to pick from like everything. Obviously, he was like lucky and was able to land essentially the two biggest horror authors of the time, mm-hmm. like a short from both of them. But you know, like they only have so much content that he would have been able to tap into. I would have loved being able to see what other King stuff he would have picked, and also what areas he would have mined for more material too.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, let's quickly talk about The Body Politic. Obviously, not a King story, so not a super big focus for this podcast, but because these two were put together, I do still want to talk about it. And this is actually where more of the cameos come in, because you have cameos from Clive Barker and John Landis, and then Cynthia Garris appears, as she does in many or all of the Mick Garris adaptations. But you also have Matt Frewer, who was Trash Can Man in The Stand. So that's sort of the King connection for this story in particular, which is fun. But really, you have this story about a lot of hands being chopped off. All of the hands are chopped off, and I'm not really sure what else the point is.
So I will admit straight up, I'm not the biggest Barker fan in general.
Okay.
He's super hit and miss for me. I don't really care for Hellraiser. I appreciate the cultural impact it's had on horror and on like pop culture, but I'm not a huge Hellraiser fan. I think like my favorite Clive Barker that I've seen is Nightbreed.
Okay.
Because Nightbreed kind of hits all my sweet spots of like, this feels like a comic book misfit team of monster superheroes. But yeah, so like Barker, I'm not a huge fan of. I love cameos. I think as horror fans, we're built-in suckers for cameos. It's just something that we're like, ooh, that's fun. And like, we love seeing the connection. Mm-hmm. And I love Matt Frewer because I was a big Max Headroom fan. Like, my dad was really into that show. He used to talk about it all the time. And then when I finally got to watch it, I really loved it. And it was, I don't know if you've ever seen it.
I have not.
Yeah, it's a super weird dystopian future science fiction show from the 80s. And it only ran for a season. And it's about, we're taken over by television networks. Like, we're ruled by television networks. And Max okay. Headroom is like kind of this character that Matt Frewer plays. It's a copy of a character's mind. It's very weird. But I really like Frewer. So I like everyone in this story, but I don't know, like the hands, it was just kind of weird.
Yeah.
I like the wraparound segment a lot. I thought that was cool, like for it with the Hand of Fate and everything. But yeah, the actual segment itself, I was just kind of like, yeah, this seems kind of like a Clive Barker thing, because he does love body horror, and which is also maybe a reason I'm not super into Barker, because I don't love like body horror stuff either.
Okay.
For me, at least, it's still enjoyable because of the actors in it, but it's definitely out of the two segments, like it's the one I like less.
Same here. And I literally had just watched Hellraiser in October of 2019. So for anyone listening, you know, shortly after this is released, it is only April 2020 right now, when we're recording this. So it wasn't all that long ago that I finally watched that movie because it was such a staple in horror. I kind of felt like it was one I should watch. If I don't watch the sequels, maybe that's okay. But, you know, it's one of those things where I've always been familiar with Clive Barker's name, but I've never really wanted to dive into a lot of his work. And I don't even think it's necessarily for me the body horror aspect. I think it's just because, one, I have been reading so much Stephen King right now. It's like all other horror almost doesn't exist, at least as far as what I'm reading goes. I'll still watch things like the recent Invisible Man movie, which I really enjoyed. And I will certainly go out and see other horror movies, but I'm not investing nearly as much time into other horror authors right now, just because this podcast is such a process as any King fan can imagine, because he's done so much work and had so many of his works adapted. It's just too much for me to try to be like, okay, let me read all of the horror novels right now.
Right. No, that makes sense. I've never like read a whole lot of his stuff either. It's always something I've wanted to. I'm pretty close to being done with King as far as like his bibliography goes.
Okay.
There's a few like odds and ends I gotta tie up. But other than that, like I'm pretty darn close to having read everything he's written. And so Barker is someone I've always wanted to tackle just because what I do like of Barker, I really like. Like I really like Nightbreed. I love Candyman. I have a lot of fun with Rawhead Rex, which is a ridiculous movie, but you know, like I still think it's fun. So they're the things I like, I definitely like. It's just the things I don't like, I really don't care for. So I do want to read his work to see if it's the translation to screen that I'm not caring for, yeah, or if he's just hit and miss as an author for me too. So it's something I'll get around to for sure. But it's the same thing as, like I said about Hellraiser, like infinite respect for the man and what he's done for horror. Like he's obviously a huge icon and I've heard nothing but great things about Clive Barker. So no disrespect to him at all. Just Hellraiser's not really my jam.
And there's so many different types of horror that if one particular subgenre isn't quite your thing, there's so many other things to enjoy. And honestly, with this segment, the thing I enjoyed the most was Matt Frewer's performance by far. And I was reading that it took him like 3 days straight to try and get the weird hand movements down. And then he was kind of like having nightmares or something that his hands were going to go crazy on him. And it certainly is something that you can see how powerful it could be from a body horror aspect. But just with how chattery teeth went and then to have this, it felt too disjointed to really work together as even just an anthology movie, which I know seems weird to say, given that I did enjoy Creepshow and I watched the Shudder Creepshow as well. But it was just something where, because I think there was also more CGI in The Body Politic, it just felt a little off. It didn't feel like you had a lot of sort of the visual aspects that you expect from this kind of horror. You know, I would have loved to see maybe some more practical effects used, because when you have all of the hands coming together, you know they're not really practical effects.
Yeah, it's funny that I read that the guy who plays the hand in Adam's Family like helped with that segment, which I thought was really funny. I agree with you. Like, and you know, part of that is because realistically, you know, they weren't supposed to be together. Like Mitch wanted Mick wanted to do this as a separate series. And then he ended up having to smash two things together, which I agree with you. Like they feel very disjointed. It's kind of just proof positive once again, that like practical effects will always be better because they're always going to stand up to the test of time more. So when you watch something like Chattery Teeth, like it's goofy, but it's charming because it's still this like pair of chattery teeth that like someone is puppeting, right? Like that they're like, and like he's having to act like these things are biting him. And this one, I think once you lose Frewer and the hands are on their own, like it loses a lot of its charm, because a lot of the charm was in Frewer's performance and with the hand stuff. And also like this again is like something I'd really be interested to read, because it comes across very silly, like the hands on his body, like talking to each other with the little voices. And like, it's just very goofy. And like, Barker doesn't strike me as a goofy guy. So I kind of wonder like what the actual short story is like, because I can't imagine it's as silly as this like short was.
Yeah. Well, do you have any final thoughts on Quicksilver Highway before we sort of dive into ratings and wrap this up?
I mean, my final thought would just be like, if you're out there and you're listening, like watch it. It's free on YouTube. It's totally not unbearable at all. It's a super fun, just like, you know, middle of the day, I'm making lunch, want to put something on movie to have on in the background.
Yeah.
It's got some good performances in it. Like I, like we said, Frewer is really good and Sparge is really good. And I think other than his hairpiece, like I really enjoy Christopher Lloyd as the role of Aaron Quicksilver too. So it's definitely like, it's fun. It's like a fun thing to throw on.
Yeah. And I just like to kind of dive into ratings just because it's always interesting for me to see if I'm on the same page as my guest. And I might have been a little harsh on this one. I gave it a 2 out of 5. And I think that's just because I wasn't super into the body politics story. And really, you have this aspect of it where if half the movie doesn't work, that's kind of a bummer, even though Frewer's performance was pretty spot on.
Yeah. If I were to rate it, I'd give it a 3 out of 5.
Okay.
Just because I think it's like goofy fun. And I agree with you completely about the body politics story, like not super working, but I enjoy all the Christopher Lloyd like wraparound stuff around it enough to bump it up a little bit.
Yeah, that's fair. I have certainly bumped up ratings just based on one person's performance before. And I'm trying to kind of look at my ratings as a whole as I do this too and be like, okay, if, you know, something like Shawshank or Kubrick's The Shining is 5 stars for me, where does that put everything else?
No, that's very fair. Yeah.
It's certainly been a challenge too, because I've been trying to do that with the books as well. And as I'm reading through like the Dark Tower series, I'm like, maybe I jumped the gun and I didn't like some of these as much as I thought I did in comparison to, you know, now that I've read a few more and stuff like that. So I may or may not be making some adjustments down the line as this podcast goes along. But for the most part, I think the TV movie stuff, a lot of it is really falling between like the 2 to 3 star range for me. And that's simply because they had so many more restrictions that it's almost, you know, not fair to them that you can't necessarily get everything across that you want to in a King adaptation.
Mm-hmm. No, for sure. And I feel you on our podcast. Like I said, at the end of every episode, we rank them. And the more time that goes on, the more movies that are added to the list.
Yeah.
Especially because we've tried to stay away from like the big slashers. So we've only done like 2 of the Fridays, 2 of the Nightmares, 1 Halloween. And it was the remake, like the 2018. We haven't done any of the originals. So like the more those get added, I start looking at the list and I'm like, huh, maybe like, I wonder what this would look like if we readjusted things, because it's very interesting to look at everything and it just gets really hard to see where things start to fit in. So I 100% feel you on that.
Yeah. And obviously ratings are totally arbitrary and don't really matter to anyone but ourselves. And you like stuff, don't feel bad for liking stuff. If someone likes this way more than you or I do, that's fantastic. I am very happy for you. Please watch all of the horror. But Ryan, thank you so much for coming on to talk about Quicksilver Highway. I know this, like we've said many times throughout this, is one of the quirkier adaptations, but sometimes those are the ones that you just kind of want to sit and watch and not have to turn your brain on to understand what's happening.
Oh, completely agree. Yeah. And thank you so much for having me. And I'm really like, as funny as it sounds, like I'm really excited that I got to watch this one because I am always I try to champion like the weird little horror that falls between the cracks a lot of the time. So when I saw this was still available, I was like, oh yeah, I love this as a kid. I'll totally do that. So yeah, thank you for having me on. It was a blast.
Of course, and it's greatly appreciated that you chose to pick this one because it was not claimed, and there are some things on the list. I'm like, is anyone going to claim this? Am I going to be flying solo? What's going on?
Yeah, feel free to hit me up for any of the weird stuff. I'll tackle the weird, so I'm around.
Awesome, will do. All right, that does it for this episode of Chat Cemetery. You can support the podcast on Patreon for $1 a month. You'll get a thank you on the show. For $2 a month, I will send you a Chat Cemetery sticker. And if you want to follow us on social media, you can do so at Chat Cemetery on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. You could also rate and review the show. That's a huge help. And as always, thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoy the rest of your day.